So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
FM Talk.
It just was the right time to do it. We had to do it because it's a war. We're losing 300,000 people a year. We don't lose that much in a war, okay, if you look. And we had to do it. But he was in a house that was more like a fortress than a house. It had steel doors. It had what they call a safety space where it's, you know, solid steel all around. He didn't get that space closed. He was trying to get into it, but he got bum-rushed so fast that he didn't get into that. We were prepared. We had, you know, massive blowtorches and everything else that you need to get through that steel, but we didn't need it. He didn't make it to that area of the house.
President Trump's talking this morning by phone to Fox News about going into Venezuela and arresting Nicolas Maduro, the illegitimate president of Venezuela. And now we have seen an arraignment take place today. Nicolas Maduro and the wife will plead not guilty to the charges. And now we watch the United States court system do what it does. We have lots of questions, which is why we need an expert. And we are so fortunate to have former United States Senator from Missouri, Jim Talent, on the air with us right now. Senator, thank you for being with us today. It's good to have you.
It's good to be with you, Annie. Thank you.
Of course. Well, Happy New Year to you. I would assume that the Happy New Year greetings from Maduro, as I understand it, as he was disembarking his aircraft here in the United States, he seemed to be in some good spirits or something. I don't know. It's kind of bizarre. When you're sitting wherever you were sitting, or when you found out, woke up to, or maybe saw late night reports Friday into Saturday that this was taking place, what is Senator Jim Talent's gut reaction to a moment like that?
A brilliant tactical stroke, one of a number of this administration has done that has opened up the possibility for a real, strategic success. In other words, a success on a higher level. And yet another aspect of a coherent and consistent American foreign policy designed to protect American security, American interests. So obviously, I liked it. And I can't say I was surprised. If anybody who's read the national security strategy understands what are the biggest impulses behind this kind of an operation, and I assume you want to talk about that probably, but
yeah,
it's a very good move. And in terms of the overall scorecard, it's still an incomplete because it depends on what we're able to make out of it in Venezuela, and they're working on that now.
We're speaking with Senator Jim Talent on the arrest of Nicolas Maduro. The number one question that I have for you, because obviously downstream we have all the political reaction. You've got a lot of the people who, the first thing they do in the morning is wake up and hate Donald Trump. So if he did it, they hate it. Why did the Trump administration go to Venezuela and arrest him? Oil? Was it China's relationship with them? Why?
Now that you're getting closer to the, in fact, that's one of the, there are two big objectives here. The one is to interdict and end the direct threat to us of narco-terrorism. And let's define that, Annie. Okay, those are networks of supersized criminal gangs, irregular but powerful armed forces and sovereign states that are using the narcotics trade as a tool of statecraft, as an asymmetric weapon against the people of the United States, to kill our people directly. The president referred to that, and to undermine the social cohesion and to gain for themselves profits, which they then plow back into the plans of our adversaries. And narco-terrorism has risen from a nuisance, 15 years ago, to a problem. And now it is a very substantial threat, and the administration is moving to end it. That's one of the reasons. And the other, and you just referred to it, we are securing our strategic perimeter. It's border control writ large, and we're securing against penetration by foreign adversaries. So Venezuela is the poster child for both of those threats, and therefore they're moving against Venezuela, and this is a tactic used in it. It's not, you know, it's not victory in and of itself, but it's along with seizing the tankers, blowing up the drug boats, and then the diplomatic campaign that they have been waging against against Venezuela to isolate them and to intimidate them. So, yeah, it is again a coherent and purposeful foreign policy with American interests as the objective. It's not about, well, you know, the problem here is that it's been so long since we've actually had a foreign policy with any coherence to it that people don't even have a language to discuss it when they're confronted with one. I know that sounds, you know, my wife would say, get off your high horse, Jim. But I mean, I really think that's the case. And this applies even to the president's friends. I mean, there's a lot of people who support this because Trump is doing it. And I support the president too. But this is, you know, this is the use of American statecraft to protect America.
So what I hear you saying, and especially in the initial reaction to my question about, is this about the oil? I would assume that the oil is then a positive consequence, a little bit of beneficial collateral damage from the arrest that was made. But is there, you know, I heard that China had a meeting in Venezuela that afternoon, that China was present with a delegation there. What is China, maybe Iran, maybe Russia, what do some of our biggest adversaries want from Venezuela?
They're very upset today about all this. So the Chinese and the Cubans have basically been running, you know, Venezuela, financing it. It's a Cuban security agents that have been used to keep the Maduro regime in power. We know the Russians, for example, supplied them with anti-air defenses. We've seen what that was worth, by the way. That's another benefit of this, is it's further exposed, you know, Russian weakness. So what do they want out of it? Well, okay, so let me give you a scenario. So the balloon goes up in the Indo-Pacific. There's an actual kinetic confrontation between the United States and China. Maybe we're at the brink of war. Maybe we're into the initial stages of it. The Chinese want assets in Latin and South America that they can use directly to interdict our Navy. You know, they were trying to get control of the Panama Canal. Remember that? That's one of the first things the Trump administration did, was kick them out of there, because if they have control of that, we can't move our ships through the canal. It's the assets they can use to distract us, to interfere, to attack us from our underbelly. This is what great powers do, is they protect their strategic perimeters. And we've been upset about that. Now, I'm going to put this in a morally neutral way. It's the same reason the Chinese don't like us being in South Korea. They don't like our alliances with Japan, because there we are right on their borders with assets that we can use against them. So that's the broadest strategic reason. But don't underestimate the importance of getting rid of this narco-terrorism.
Right.
And the Cubans engage in it. The Nicaraguans engage in it. And I'll tell you, the Mexicans play ball with those people, too. And this is a message to all of them. No, you can't just attack this is an attack on the United States. It's not just, it's wrong to think of this as a sort of a criminal justice operation, which is one of the reasons it's so silly that federal judges are thinking of getting involved in this. They have no understanding of these networks and of the threat it represents to the United States. This is inherently an executive function. Although Congress can play if it wants to, this is not a judicial operation here or a criminal justice operation. It has overtones there. We're going to try this guy, and I'm sure they're figuring out how to use that in order to advance our messaging and all this.
We're speaking with former Senator Jim Talent. I was excited that we were able to talk to you today because I have a lot of questions. Certainly don't have the foreign policy expertise that you do to give us some sense as to why and what is going on here. So with the arrest of Nicolas Maduro, some people of course, the Trump detractors always, but there are a lot of people on both sides of the aisle supporting the president and being detractors of the president. The words like Afghanistan, Libya, Iraq start to come up. Regime change, saying that we're not supposed to be the regime change people. We're supposed to be the America First people. Is this regime change? I heard the Trump administration say, no, this is restoration.
Yeah, because they don't want this to get labeled with something that has very negative connotations. Now, is this, I mean, just look at it. Is it regime change? Yeah, I mean, there's been a change in the regime. There's a change anyway in personnel at the top. And the object of this now going forward is to create a transitional government there that will, first and foremost, play ball with us on the issues that we care about. When I just given them to you, we got to stop the drug trade. And you got to stop being a an outpost for our enemies, supplying oil to them, engaging in the, you know, the shadow tanker market and all that to support the Chinese, to support the Iranians. That's going to be our demands. And then we need a government that is capable of governing effectively and stabilizing the country with a view eventually to, towards having free elections and, you know, getting the country back to what it was before Chavez and Maduro. But our primary purpose there is protecting the interests of the American people. And so in the short term, yeah, we'll play ball if they'll play ball. And you notice, by the way, this whole operation, you know, the Trump prepares the information environment. In other words, this takes months. He offers to negotiate. But then at the same time, the stick is behind it, you know, blowing up the drug boats,
yes,
seizing the tankers. And it's all designed to convey a message to adversaries and people in the middle. Look, you know, if you play ball with the United States, you can get something out of it. If you don't, you're going to end up like Maduro or, you know, like the Iranian nuclear program.
Right.
Or like, you know, the Houthis when they were attacking our shipping, or like Hamas right now, where our ally, Israel, is going after them. So this is great power politics, effectively planned and executed to protect the American people.
Senator Talent, do you, like, how long, the president said at his Mar-a-Lago press conference on Saturday that basically we're going to run Venezuela for the time being.
Yeah.
How? What is the time being? How long does this last?
And he says, The Maduro, the woman, who's, by the way, a great leader, he says she's not popular enough. But what he was saying there was she's not capable. There are regime elements still in control of the security forces. We don't know where the army is going to be. So we need a leadership that is capable of staying in power. And it's, you know, as a practical matter, that's going to include some elements of the Maduro, you know, coalition and factions. And, you know, what that's going to look like, you know, we have a man who's out front on this, Marco Rubio, who I can tell you is among elected officials and former elected officials is the expert on Latin and South America. You know, he's up front of this, not an envoy like Witkoff. That's very deliberate because Trump knows the credibility he has in that region. I have a lot of faith in Marco, but like, this is not going to be easy. But we're in a better position now, no matter what happens. Everybody's sat up again and taken note. You know, you screw with the United States and the American people, and bad things are going to happen to you.
Right.
And that's a really good message to send around the world. The Iranians are more nervous because of this, I can tell you that.
Well, I was going to segue into that because I have a lot of people asking or tweeting about, or I've read about these protests taking place in Iran. And, you know, Senator Talent, I'd love to get your thoughts on what is happening there on the ground in Iran, and how does a move like this, the United States arresting Maduro, affect Iran?
Well, these are major protests. They started over economic issues and among the shopkeeper class because inflation is so bad there. It was like 1.4 million reals to a dollar. But it's spread beyond that now, you know, because of the enormous discontent for political reasons, economic reasons, social reasons. I mean, that regime is hated by its people about as much as any regime around the world. And the Iranian people are sophisticated, you know, people. It used to be a first world country. So it's a major problem for the regime. You know, the issue is, does it have the security forces to put this down? Can it pay them? They really have a problem from a money standpoint. That's why they're lessening the subsidies they're paying, even though they know that causes more discontent. They're running out of money. But most of the people I trust in this area think that the end of the Islamic Republic is inevitable, but is not imminent. Because if you're, you know, the key is going to be, are there leaders in the IRG and the security forces that are willing to pull the trigger on the mullahs? And the supreme leader is like 86 years old. You know, from their perspective, it makes sense to wait for him to die and then make your move. But I don't think the next leader of Iran is going to be a mullah.
Interesting.
I think it'll be probably a military authoritarian. And I'm sure the administration is laying plans right now to say, okay, how can we get that group of people to play ball with us on our objectives in the Middle East? I bet anything there were some discussions between Trump and Netanyahu about that.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't expect anything huge, although you never know. I mean, these regimes, I mean, look at Syria. He held up for 15 years, and then he was gone in 15 days.
True. When the people in Iran that are protesting right now, are there specific issues? I mean, oppression obviously sucks, but to move in a heavy-fisted, to put it extremely lightly, country, the way Iran is ruled right now, to move to the streets and to make a collective and large global message about wanting change, what are the main issues that they're protesting?
Well, some of it is economic. And, you know, when you lose the shopkeeper class, they're normally not very political. That's a major issue for the regime. And they've not, you know, they've not gone around shooting those people. Then, of course, you have the, you know, the students. And then you have the people who are tired of a regime that's not only controlling the politics and economics of the country, but it's telling the women what they can wear. I mean, this kind of social oppression, it's tiresome. And the whole ideology, you know, the religious fanaticism behind the regime, I think is bankrupt. It's played out. You know, it's yesterday's news, and they've had enough of it. But are the security forces going to begin abandoning them? And if they don't, are the people going to be willing to go out en masse and be killed en masse? That's a big ask.
Yeah.
And so could happen. I mean, they're about that fed up. And this whole, you know, look at the last 2 years, all the plans of the Iranian regime. You know, we're going to get a nuclear weapon. We're going to destroy Israel. We've got this proxy network. We're going to control the whole region. It's all up in smoke. You know, and dictators who suffer setbacks like that, you talk about undermining, even on their own terms, they failed, right? Plus which, they're all looking around at each other to see who's a traitor.
Yeah.
Who's really working for Mossad, you know?
Yeah.
Imagine this supreme leader. I mean, he's going from house to house. And then when Trump comes in, it's his classic Trump, and says, oh, yeah, we're locked and loaded. He's stirring that up, see?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who knows what he'll do?
How different will the landscape of the world look at the end of Donald Trump's second term?
Well, if it keeps like this, and we haven't even talked about the economy.
Yeah.
Which I'm talking to my friends. I mean, I'm not a businessman, and this economy's taking off. You know, we've got energy. We're going to be an energy powerhouse again. Energy prices going down, real wages going up. The year-on-year deficit was down $600 billion. Got all these investments in manufacturing. And I'll tell you why he's doing that. I mean, part of it is that Trump, I think, really cares about, you know, the classic worker. I just think he's very partial to that. But the other reason is, you know, if we're going to protect ourselves going forward, we've got to be able to outproduce other countries. And we're in this conflict now with China, or competition, call it what you want. It's first time, really, since we became a powerful country, that we've had an adversary who can outproduce us.
Hmm.
You know, it's not a good thing.
Will they?
And go ahead.
I was going to say, when it comes to the economics and production with our presence in Venezuela, will the United States benefit from the oil that exists in Venezuela?
I'm sure that's what Trump intends. And I should say, you know, when I say it's not about oil, the presidents have discretion to elevate some interests into priorities, and it's clear that the president has elevated into a priority investments in the United States and economic opportunities for the United States. It's not, I think, the primary. I mean, we talked about this when he did his Middle East trip, mm-hmm. right? Remember to Saudi Arabia and Syria and places like that.
Yes.
But it's a big deal for him. I mean, he's going out recruiting investments and deals that are going to be good for the American economy, and especially our manufacturing and technological base. So, yeah, I mean, and look, if we just have a government that's not a tool of foreign powers in Venezuela and they want to develop their oil industry, what companies are they going to look to? It's American companies.
Right.
We're the leaders in that field. So all we need is a fair playing field. Plus, which they stole a bunch of our company's assets, and we're entitled to compensation for that.
Well, at the end of this president's second term, we'll have highs and lows that we can't even predict at this point, but definitely things are moving very quickly. The president seems to have a goal in mind and the guts to pursue it, and that's been the case.
Talking to reporters at 4:30 in the morning, I think I'm the only person in the United States who doesn't have Donald Trump's cell phone.
Nope, there are two people. I might be the other one. Senator Talent, you're such a pleasure to have here on the show with us with your expertise. When we put out there that we were going to be speaking to you, a lot of our folks are listening.
Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try Assemble and Bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
We're very excited to hear what you had to say. So thank you for being with us today.
Good talking to you. Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year to you as well. Bye-bye. Senator Jim Talent, the former United States Senator from Missouri, former congressman and chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council. All right, let's take a break. We're going to speak in a little bit here with Joe Severino. He is a Republican candidate for governor of Illinois. You can go to severinoforgovernor.com and learn a little bit about him. And we'll talk to him about his vision for the state of Illinois and how he intends to win the primary and beat the Democrats in that cobalt blue state of Illinois. From our lips to God's ears. We'll be right back. It's